A mood of acute panic, even fear, overtook the unit. It was in fact Bjork who proposed the solution. Peter Teleborian, a psychiatrist, had become associated with SIS's Department of Counter-Espionage in a different case. He had been key as a consultant in connection with counter-espionage's surveillance of a suspected industrial spy. At a critical stage of the investigation, they needed to know how the person in question might react if subjected to a great deal of stress. Teleborian had offered concrete advice, and SIS had succeeded in averting a suicide, managing to turn the spy in question into a double agent. After Salander's attack on Zalachenko, Bjork had surreptitiously engaged Teleborian as an outside consultant to the section. The solution to the problem had been very simple. Carl Axel Bodin would disappear into rehabilitative custody. Agneta Sophia Salander would necessarily disappear into an institution for long-term care. All the police reports on the case were collected at SIS and transferred by way of the assistant head of secretariat to the section. Teleborian was assistant head physician at St. Stephen's Psychiatric Clinic for Children in Uppsala. All that was needed was a legal psychiatric report, which Bjork and Teleborian drafted together, and then a brief and, as it turned out, uncontested decision in a district court. It was a question only of how the case was presented. The Constitution had nothing to do with it. It was, after all, a matter of national security. Besides, Salander was obviously insane. A few years in an institution would do her nothing but good. Goldberg had approved the operation. This solution to their multiple problems presented itself at a time when the Zalachenko unit was on its way to being dissolved. The Soviet Union had ceased to exist, and Zalachenko's usefulness was definitively a thing of the past. The unit procured a generous severance package from security police funds. They arranged for him to have the best rehabilitative care, and after 6 months, they put him on a flight to Spain. From that moment on, they made it clear to Zalachenko that he and the section were going their separate ways. It had been one of Gulberg's last responsibilities. 1 week later, he reached retirement age and handed the reins to his chosen successor, Frederick Clinton. Thereafter, Gulberg acted only as an advisor in especially sensitive matters. He stayed in Stockholm for another 3 years, and worked almost daily at the section, but the number of his assignments decreased, and gradually he disengaged himself. He then returned to his hometown of Laholm and did some work from there. At first he had travelled frequently to Stockholm, but he made these journeys less and less often, and eventually not at all. He had not even thought about Zalachenko for months, until the morning he discovered the daughter in every newspaper headline. Gulberg followed the story in a state of bewilderment. It was no accident, of course, that Bjurman had been Salander's guardian. On the other hand, he couldn't see why the old Zalachenko story should surface. Salander was obviously deranged, so it was no surprise that she had killed these people, but that Zalachenko might have any connection to the affair had not dawned on him. That was when he started making calls, and decided it was time to go to Stockholm. The section was faced with its worst crisis since the day he had created it. Zalachenko dragged himself to the toilet. Now that he had crutches, he could move around his room. On Sunday, he forced himself through short, sharp training sessions. The pain in his jaw was still excruciating, and he could manage only liquid food, but he could get out of his bed and begin to cover small distances. Having lived so long with a prosthesis, he was used to crutches. He practiced moving noiselessly on them, maneuvering back and forth around his bed. Every time his right foot touched the floor, a terrible pain shot up his leg. He gritted his teeth. He thought about the fact that his daughter was very close by. It had taken him all day to work out that her room was 2 doors down the corridor to the right. The night nurse had been gone 10 minutes. Everything was quiet. It was 2 in the morning. Zalachenko laboriously got up and fumbled for his crutches. He listened at the door but heard nothing. He pulled open the door and went into the corridor. He heard faint music from the nurse's station. He made his way to the end of the corridor, pushed open the door, and looked into the empty landing where the elevators were. Going back down the corridor, he stopped at the door to his daughter's room and rested there on his crutches for 1/2 a minute, listening. Salander opened her eyes when she heard a scraping sound. It was as though someone was dragging something along the corridor. For a moment there was only silence, and she wondered if she was imagining things. Then she heard the same sound again, moving away. Her uneasiness grew. Zalachenko was out there somewhere. She felt fettered to her bed. Her skin itched under the neck brace. She felt an intense desire to move, to get up. Gradually she succeeded in sitting up. That was all she could manage. She sank back onto the pillow. She ran her hand over her neck brace and located the fastenings that held it in place. She opened them and dropped the brace to the floor. Immediately it was easier to breathe. What she wanted more than anything was a weapon, and to have the strength to get up and finish the job once and for all. With difficulty she propped herself up, switched on the nightlight, and looked around the room. She could see nothing that would serve her purpose. Then her eyes fell on a nurse's table on the wall across from her bed. Someone had left a pencil there. She waited until the night nurse had come and gone, which tonight she seemed to be doing about every half hour. Presumably the reduced frequency of the nurse's visits meant that the doctors had decided her condition had improved. Over the weekend, the nurses had checked on her at least once every 10 minutes. She could hardly notice any difference herself. When she was alone, she gathered her strength, sat up, and swung her legs over the side of the bed. She had electrodes taped to her body to record her pulse and breathing, but the wires stretched in the direction of the pencil. She put her weight on her feet and stood up. Suddenly she swayed, off balance. For a second she felt as though she would faint, but she steadied herself against the bed and concentrated her gaze on the table in front of her. She took small, wobbly steps, reached out and grabbed the pencil. Then she retreated slowly to the bed. She was exhausted. After a while she managed to pull the sheet and blanket up to her chin. She studied the pencil. It was a plain wooden pencil, newly sharpened. It would make a passable weapon, for stabbing a face or an eye. She laid it next to her hip and fell asleep.